Hey, you. Want access to exclusive secret ops intel? Check out the link in the description.
That 98% of kids are at the creative genius level at age 5. 98%, it's pretty much everybody. By 15, only 12% rank that high. By adulthood, the number dwindles to 2%, which to me says two things. Number one, we're all creative. And then number two, our society and the way we're set up beats it out of us.
Welcome to Secret Ops, the podcast uncovering the world of operations one episode at a time. I'm your host, Ariana Caffone, and today is officially the 50th episode of Secret Ops. Can't believe that we're at this episode, and I cannot believe the guest I snagged. I mean, I did sort of force him to do it, but it's because it is Joey Caffone, the CEO of Baron Fig, the author of the best-selling book, Laws of Creativity, and award-winning designer. If you could tell by the last names, he is also my husband. Now, as operators, I know we are creatives. In fact, everybody listening is a creative, but I think we have forgotten that. So I talked to Joey not only about why he believes that we are also all creatives, but about the entire book writing process. I was able to watch it step by step along the way, and I know a lot of people in my life that would be interested in hearing how he did it, so maybe they could do it for themselves. You and I talk a lot about operations, and we also talk a lot about creativity, and I believe that all operators are creative. And you believe all people are creative, so much so that you wrote a book called The Laws of Creativity. So can you give us the spiel on like what The Laws of Creativity is and why you wanted to write the book?
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Joey Caffone. I founded Baron Fig and I wrote The Laws of Creativity several years later because I feel like creativity is my greatest strength. And I think it is underserved. Underspoken about in a way in which it applies to everything. Of course, there's like, hey, designers are creative or writers are creative, sure, blah, blah, blah. But I don't care about that. It's more like everyday folks. And whenever I talk to people about creativity, I always get the I'm not creative at all spiel. And that's just not true. So I was forced to write a book to address it.
So can you break down the structure of the three parts and why you wanted to approach creativity, I would say, with like such gravitas?
So the book's divided into three parts to answer your question. It's foundation, process, and excellence. And it's basically designed to be read from front to back, but you don't have to. So there's 37 laws that build upon one another. In foundation, you're going to learn how to think creatively. You'll understand how self-expression works. Just how unique you are and how to better enjoy the things you do. And it is the foundation for being creative and doing the creative act, which is the second section process. It's a how-to guide, literally teaches you how to create anything from start to finish. You can follow the laws and they are almost like an instructional guide to creating whatever it is, whether you want to write a book, make a spreadsheet, do a talk. You'll begin with total zero. You don't even need an idea and you can go right through to publishing your creation. And then the third part, I don't want to say my favorite, but I really enjoyed earning the right to write this part, is excellence. And you'll learn how some creators rise above the rest and how you can too.
The listeners that don't know your work with Baron Fig, your design work, can you just give a little background on that?
Sure. So, I mean, it started when I was a kid. But like Baron Fig, I founded, I don't know, 12-ish years ago now. It was my fifth company that I started. And we make tools for thinkers, aka pens, journals, and so forth. And like we try to be extremely creative, you know, so a pen is not just here's our blue pen or our red pen. It's like the good luck pen based on all the good luck charms and all the cultures of the world. Or a notebook would be like computer world where we imagine fictionalized universes based on hardware, software, and, you know, user interfaces and then create a notebook, three notebooks around it, right? So like it just an abundance of creativity. And over the past 10 years, we've released one new edition every month for 10 years. Right? So that's 120 crazy ideas that we've done. And so it's been like a boot camp for learning how to make the creative process formulaic, reliable, teachable, executable, and just really efficient.
On top of that, though, you went to school for design. You actually worked in publishing, designing book covers. Mm-hmm. You also branded for companies. So a company would come to you and say, hey, we want to rebrand. You would go through that process. Right. So there's like many angles that you've approached this outside of, if you think about building a product, it's web design, product design, all these different layers of design and creativity that you've had to think through to sort of pop this book out.
Yeah, to say, how do I
download that and give that to someone else? Once you knew you wanted to do that, how did you go out and actually do it?
So I knew I wanted to write this book for a long time before I started. And I kept a Apple note on my phone for 6-7 years. And every time I would have a conversation or a lesson learned within the realm of creativity that I knew was something that needed to be written about, I would type up like a phrase, you know, a very, very brief note. So 7 years of collected notes that were in my pocket, when I sat down to write, I arranged that into what would become the table of contents and then started, you know, writing right off the bat. So I had this structure that I didn't need to kind of like pull together last minute. It had been brooded on and collected and proven over time. That's the second benefit of planning very long. And the third was my process was like immaculate. And I guess my hidden fourth benefit.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I'm going to say though, my hidden fourth benefit and your favorite benefit is that I was a English major. And so I also like am familiar with writing.
For my whole life with Joey, anytime something happens, it doesn't need to be related to English in any way. He'll just go, well, you know, I was an English major. And I'm like, yes, right. I know you were an English major. I understand that that was what you were.
English majors anyway, are amazing.
Sure.
Okay.
So let's talk about benefit number three, because everybody who's listening is in some way interested in the process of writing a book. So just to go back, you wanted to write this and you sort of just brain dumped your ideas and then iterated that over many years in an Apple note structure. Just like things would come up, you'd have those shower thoughts and you would add it into the Apple note until you started to see some patterns that would emerge. So once you wanted to take it out of that sort of divergent stage into a more structured stage to begin writing it, how did you do that?
So I took the Apple note and I just kind of listed out more formally what each little note meant. You know, it was scribbles in the moment. And then I set up a table of contents that represented them within a week that I just started writing. And then I put it in Notion, which is a piece of software for the folks who don't know that helps you organize your ideas pretty well and have totally yin to the yang of analog, which I like notebooks and pen and then Notion. And at that point, I repeated the same process, but instead of at a macro scale, it was at a micro scale. So I would take just a bunch of crazy random notes on each of those chapter elements and do research. And then when I felt it was about to congeal into like a narrative, I would just sit down and write it usually in one or two evenings. And then Ariana would read it.
This is also, I believe, where you started tracking the stories that you wanted to tell and associating them with the themes of the chapters. Is that right? So you have like a case study library and then your chapter library that you were then cross-referencing and trying to figure out how that matched.
Well, I was also doing like a kind of like a diversity and inclusivity exercise there too. Like I wanted enough women and enough like non-white people, right? So that anyone could relate to something in this book. So I had a table of a lot of people that I respected across all sorts of cultures and, you know, genders and sexes and everything. And then it became like, hey, how do I get this person in? And so with 37 chapters and therefore 37 stories to start each one as examples, the first half was super easy. Like I would, you know, go up to a chapter and I'd come to a story from like Bruce Lee or Leonardo da Vinci or whatever. And then I'd be like, hey, I've got 37 options. I could figure out how to stick this in. It got really difficult, though, as I went on and only had a handful left. And then I was asking everybody, like, hey, do you have, you know, like a really specific story for when someone like published a thing, but then it turned into this other thing and they didn't mean that? And then people were like, what are you fucking talking about? And yeah, that, then it became hard. So like there was a deceleration at the end to getting it done. I would say like the last 10 probably took up almost like 30% of the time. Like it was an outsized amount of effort to match those stories. But I do have a philosophy that I think is important to mention here. That's kind of abstract and not really written down anywhere, which is, I had a rule that I never would go backwards. So I would write a chapter, you would read it, give me your initial impressions, and then that day or the next day, I would make a couple of adjustments if I needed to, and then I never looked at it again. For however many months was left in the process, what was done was done. So I only had, when I sat down to write, there was no such thing as rewriting, which I think a lot of writers get caught up in early on. It was only forward momentum. Writing only counted if I was adding words to the total, which I tracked. And so by requiring that of myself and tracking words per day, it was pretty easy to just build a book, like keep going.
How many words a day were you writing, or how many words per chapter? Because you were tracking word count.
I only required myself to do 200 words a day, which is like a tweet, basically. But I averaged, give me a sec. I'll pull up the data. One sec.
Yes, this was interesting. Outside of Notion, Joey used another app called, what was the app, the writing app?
Ulysses. Yeah. So for the first draft, I did 199 writing sessions. That averaged out to 414 words per session, which when you think about it is nothing. 400 words is like a couple of, you know, you text more than 400 words a day.
Yeah. Emails. Think about writing an email. So when you would write a version of the chapter, we got into this, I guess, buddy system where then you would give it to me to read out loud to you. And I don't know why we started doing that. I'm not sure where that came from.
It was really easy to then identify where you, because you would like sort of stop and be like, this doesn't make sense, like just naturally by reading out loud. Whereas I wouldn't see that. I wouldn't be the witness to that, only if you were reading in your head. And so it was easy, and it was very helpful for not only you to give me your judgment, but me to judge your like interpretation live.
Yes, because like you write with a certain intention, you write with a certain idea, and then a stranger picks up your book and they're going to read it through their aperture of that book. And I guess I was the first like cold read of what that would be interpreted as. I also think that there was something in the intonation that I would read it in. So for those who don't know, I went to acting school and we did a ton of voice work and voiceover practice. So that's the skill that I have where I could pick up a cold read and be able to read it with, you know, different sort of intention. And I think that did help you as well, kind of figure out the emotional flow of a chapter, because that was a part of it. It's not just the story, but how do you get people emotionally into the story to then learn the lesson? So that's a pro tip I think that some people probably don't think about, is that if you're writing a book, potentially a part of the early editing process could be someone reading it out loud to you, just to sort of hear it back and get that feedback early on. So I guess to recap for listeners, Joey started an Apple Note, brain dumped it for many years, started to organize it. Then when he officially wanted to write the book, he took those Apple Notes and he hashed it out into a proper structure, like a table of contents. Then from there, he would chip away at each of those chapters and be able to say, I want to achieve an X amount of word goal a day. And it was a small, achievable amount. You said 200 words, was that right?
200, yeah. And some days I did like 201 and some days I did 2000.
And every day just committed to trying it out, writing it out, and then listening to it, making minor edits or restructuring slightly with that first chapter edit, and then moving on to the next one and moving on to the next one. And then in parallel, you did create that case study library to be able to pull from. So as you heard unique stories, you could pull those into your chapters. But that also, I do want to just like emphasize, I really loved how you did the case study library. Our history is written by white men. And so it was really important to you to be able to bring in different stories from different cultures and generations. And so there was a lot of digging. I mean, now with AI, it probably would have been easier, but we didn't have that at the time. But in being able to speak from different stories of people being creative, you also showed how a scientist is creative in creating Velcro from burrs, or how a technologist is creative in taking, you know, the mathematics and of something like Ada Lovelace or whatever it may be, and bringing that into the world as we know it. So like all of these pieces allowed you actually to, I think, deepen what creativity means, because we are hearing stories that we've never heard before, or we're seeing them in a way that's not like I'm painting on a canvas, but I'm using the world as my canvas as a creative.
It was also just cool rediscovering people like Ada Lovelace or Hedy Lamarr. And she's like, you know, brilliant, like almost a brilliant machinist. Bruce Lee, like, actually was only a movie star for the last 3 years of his life. He was mostly a martial arts student and master. Like, there's so many things that I found interesting in folks I thought I knew. And then it was really cool to present that to people, where I think a lot of books maybe tell stories. They use like classic stories. You know, you pointed out a bunch. That's too obvious. Everybody knows that story, right? And then I would have to hunt for...
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, hunt for like the angle in the story that was familiar but new. And that was really challenging. Really,
I would say it was a... I was definitely an opinionated person to come into the editing process. I do find, though, that you had a lot of other voices that came in as well to give different views at different stages. So can you talk about the other players that supported this journey?
As far as the team members, I mean, you were the first team member, like the unofficial team member reading. And then it went right to an editor. And her name was Ariel, and she did like a phenomenal editing job. And I worked with her for a while. And it's called developmental editing, where it's, I think, not what most people think of when they think of editing, is like, put your periods in the right place, is grammar right? But that's actually the very last step. Developmental editing is where they read the book and say like, hey, how do we improve the ideas, the presentation, the flow, all of that. And then after that process, then it goes to the copy editor, where then they're just like, hey, is your grammar and your punctuation right and everything? And the developmental editing process was really fascinating, because I had always heard and sort of expected that when you go into editing, you lose 20% of your book, right? It's like an unofficial like thing. So, okay, I wrote more thinking it would be cut down to less. Like, my actual goal was 60,000 words, which is like a proper book. So I wrote like 80,000, figuring I would lose a chunk. And shockingly, she had me add more and more. Like, the ideas were on point. The ideas were functional. She was like a huge creativity buff, had read so many books herself on the subject, and had like really enjoyed my mission and my angle. And it ended up being 94,000 words before we were done, which I was shocked by, because I genuinely thought, okay, I'm finally done writing. Let's chop this son of a bitch up. Yeah, and it's like, okay, I really think you need two more chapters here. And I'm like, oh my God. No, you didn't just say that. But
I know, we're like, are we making off like a telephone book, or are we making a
yeah, seriously. Book, I mean, it turned out to be a thick ass book. I mean, it's over 400 pages. None of that was expected. But anyway, yeah, so basically three other people. There was you, there was a developmental editor and a copy editor, and then I designed the whole book. The cover, how the interior would work, had some helpful folks whose sole job it is to set the interior. Like, I designed how I wanted it, and they just did it over and over for 400 pages, and then it was off to the press.
Also, I do want to shout out the Baron Fig team at the time too. Where there was your like book launch and store. There were all these other pieces that went into then marketing that. Yeah, there's all this other, you know, step by step that has to get rolled out. Oftentimes, when I feel like people want to write a book, they think it's a very solo journey. What I was surprised with was how collaborative and how much of a community you need to write the book. Because even if, let's say, you write the book solo, you have to release the book. And that's a whole other process that maybe isn't your skill set. Now, I'm curious now, because you wrote this before AI was what we know today. It was like right before.
It's like I did this before like a machine could do this for me. Like, I'm so glad that this is like unquestionably my writing the whole way through.
Yeah. I am curious now how writers are leveraging AI to do that. I mean, that's another interview for another time. But there's got to be an interesting conversation. Maybe when you write your second book, we'll talk about how that integrated into what you did.
I've got my Apple Note going for the second one.
I know.
I'm moving.
So if you, wrapping up the book side of this, if somebody's listening, they've always had their like dream or bucket list item to write a book. What are like three things that you would say to keep at the forefront of your brain to get that in motion?
I mean, you know, the whole phrase is writers write, right? No pun intended on that last one. So it's like, if you want to write a book, you should start writing. The best way to do that, to get started, is twofold. One, like start your Apple Note, right? Or start your little note on your phone or in a book, whatever is on you at all times. I use my phone. I'm a fan of physical, but I use my phone just because it's always on me. And you need to capture it in the moment. Part two is write an introduction. The introduction is basically the overview, the thesis of your book. So like I wrote the introduction and that I had a lot of people read up front. And then when people were like, yeah, I would love to like read a book about what you're saying this book is about, you know, and then I was like, cool, that's the book. Let's rock and roll. So the intro is the first thing I did. And then I went back at the end and I refreshed the intro just to reflect a little bit of what I had done on the journey, but it was largely 95% set in stone. So take your notes and write the intro like now. And don't worry if it sucks, because you can write it again and again and again and again.
And like, it will suck.
Yeah.
It will suck.
If you're really having trouble, buy my book and it'll tell you how to do this whole thing. I mean, that's the idea, right? It's like literally it will set you up for understanding what you have to say that's worth saying and why it's okay to say it. And then it will teach you from zero to completion the steps by which you should go about writing your book or doing whatever it is you want.
Let's talk about, I want you and I to get on our soapbox about creativity in the world and people who label themselves as creative. So for context, you went to design school, you were around traditional creatives. I went to acting school, I was around traditional creatives. And both you and I, when we met at some point, we were like, creativity is for everybody. I hate when somebody calls themselves a creative because we all are. Or I hate when somebody's like, I'm an artist, because it makes them seem like the term artist. No, it like makes themselves seem like they're on this pedestal. And I think you and I feel very strongly about this. Where did that feeling come from you? Because we felt that way before we met each other. So what in your life sort of made you realize that everyone is creative and I want to get that message out there?
That's an interesting approach to it. I mean, I've done, you know, before I did design, I did like other jobs and just excelled in ways by being creative. So that was eye-opening. And then paying attention to who succeeded around me and their thinking was, again, like, you know, creativity was a strong element, you know, creativity and communication, those the two C's were like, you know, did the heavy lifting for all the people who succeed. But that is anecdotal, that is personal. What really tipped me over the scales and said, okay, now I've got an entire anchor point to write this book on, was when I found the study that NASA had done about creativity, which is they did a pretty long-term study, like I think 30 years, and they found that 98% of kids are at the creative genius level at age 5. 98%. That's pretty much everybody. By 15-year-olds, only 12% rank that high. By adulthood, the number dwindles to 2%, which to me says two things. Number one, we're all creative. And then number two, our society and the way we're set up beats it out of us. And so my goal with the book was, number one, to say to help you realize that that was true, that you were creative. You were the 98%, not the 2%. Poor bastard kids that, you know, didn't have the creativity in them for whatever reason. But, and then number two, to actually help you get it back.
Mm.
Yeah.
I found, so the interesting thing for me is, having been in a very creative field of acting and being a performer, and then going into a more like traditional field of operations, being a COO, a VP of operations, it's the same skills, yeah, just a absolutely different medium. There are all these different people who are doing all of this hidden work, and how they do their work is actually incredibly based on their ability to think outside of the box. And I don't like people, I don't like the idea that creatives are only for people that do a creative medium.
That's so dumb.
I think that's insane and stupid. So stupid. We all are. It's so stupid.
Well, we all have the ability to be.
Yes.
And I just make that distinction because a lot of people, like we said, 98% of folks have abandoned the creativity. But if you look at someone at the top of their field, in any field, they are highly creative. And that goes for mental things as well as physical. Like, for example, you know, the way Michael Jordan perceived the court was so much more advanced than the people around him. And it's because he was employing his ability to interpret and innovate that made him excel. Like, he wasn't physically much better than anyone else. It was his mental game. You know, Serena Williams, probably the best tennis player, not even the best female, just the best tennis player on earth ever, said that tennis is 98% mental and 2% physical. You know, there's so many of the hundreds of thousands of tennis players on earth. Like, the difference is not her physicality. Like, while she is incredibly fit, it is the mental ability, in her own words, that has set her apart. And it goes for everything. Mm-hmm. And I hate to use this word because people bastardize it so quickly, but I believe that, and I'm not even a belief, I mean, I think it's a fact, at the top of every field, the person who is excelling is an artist of that field, without a doubt. Like, they have turned it from a practice into an art. And I don't want this to get like woo-woo bullshit, like, what is art? Oh, here we go again. Like, screw that. But it just means that, like, the way they are doing it is so fluid, so dynamic, and so like constantly innovative and almost effortless. It's a combination of so much skill, so much confidence, so much effort, so much experience, that it transcends like what most people are doing.
Now, touching base on two things, and then we're going to wrap up for today. We had a daughter this year. Mm. And I know that having a little one has made me rethink everything in life. It's also made me rethink creativity and operations. I wanted to ask you, how has it made you look at your mission of creativity differently?
That's a great question. I mean, she's so young still at 8 months. I would say it's a process. Like, she's in the discovery phase where everything is new, and that's really exciting for me and for her, right? To witness that. We love that. Like, well, she's like, wow, look at that light bulb. Or whatever it is, light switch.
Mr. Fan. fans
Mr.
are
fan, yes, the fan
Mr.
on the
fan
Steeler.
In our household is and that's Randy the fan.
Yes.
The most
our fans are just celebrities in this, truly entertainers to the max. I would say that right now I'm just discovering with her and remembering how fun it is to discover things, you know, and enjoying her curiosity. What about you? What are you learning from having a little baby?
I'm learning that in a minute, things can change. And that includes her discovering life. So, for example, part of the development of a baby, if you don't have one or aren't close to one, is like being able to drink water out of a straw. Mm-hmm. And so let's figure out how I can get her to learn how to drink out of a straw, something that we take for granted every day. Mm-hmm. And it was like tiny, tiny micro things, micro changes. Okay, we tip the cup. Okay, we try it this way. Maybe she just chews on the straw. And it was interesting that one day she just started like drinking out of the straw. And yeah. It sounds so simple, but if in that moment the sort of skill isn't there, there's all of these tiny little things that you can do to learn the skill. And that I take that for myself now too. Like I started editing these episodes and it was really hard at the beginning and it's still difficult, but every time I do it, I learn new things. I learn how to take my creative voice and put it into Secret Ops. And that's really empowering. And it takes longer than you want it to. All of a sudden the moment happens and she's drinking out of a straw. Yeah. But that was weeks of just tiny little things that added up to that.
Everything shifts. Yeah. In an instant. It's cool.
The whole world opens up. Everything changes. And that's really an important lesson to relearn when our society is all about instant gratification, that actually those things are, it's the opposite. It takes a long time. And then one day it feels instant, but it's not.
I'm ready for her to instantly hold her bottle so that we don't have to hold these.
Me too.
Good God.
She'll hold this straw. She'll hold everything else, but her bottle, she just puts her hands up behind her head and said, this is my me time. This is my self-care time.
Yep. Keep going, Mom.
Okay.
Keep going, Dad.
Let's wrap up with some rapid fire questions.
Fire.
Okay. What is the favorite part of your day?
Bacon every morning. Okay, no, that's just the first thing that came to mind.
It smells like a diner every day.
I mean, come on, you and Leona are my favorite things. That's obvious. And of course, my little dude, Luigi. But like, Luigi. Yeah, you know, I do enjoy my bacon in the morning.
What is the best purchase you've made under $50?
Under 50 buckaroos, like macaroni and cheese discounted, like to where it was just amazing amounts of it. But recently we
could be real Cabot macaroni and cheese. I think that probably.
Yes. Excellent. You get a lot of mac and cheese for under 50 bucks. Recently though, $29 space heater because we have a drafty door on the living room and that thing made all the difference.
It did. What is your favorite quote?
The unexamined life is not worth living by Socrates. Brutally honest.
What is something that makes you little kid happy?
My daughter.
What is the most important lesson you've learned in your life so far?
Oh my God. What is the most, no one's going to do it for you. What's the most important lesson you learned in your life?
Try again, fail better. That's a quote that stuck with me for many years. And it's just get up and do it again. Get up and do it again. Do it again. Fail again. Fail better. Don't stop. Thank you for just being you. If people are listening and they want to read your book, see Baron Fig, where should we point them?
Go to joeycaffone.com and you can find everything you need and more.
Fantastic. Again, thank you for your brain, for your knowledge, for your love. Secret Ops listeners, thank you for listening to Secret Ops. please remember to tell your friends about Secret Ops. Subscribe if you haven't, and check us out on YouTube if you are a visual learner like me, and we will see you next time.
Hey, listener. Do you want to be a top operator in business and in life? Well, we at Secret Ops are here to help you do just that. Check out our monthly Secret Ops newsletter with exclusive intel just for you. From bonus content to secret resources, we've given you the VIP access. To sign up, check out the link in the description. And as always, thanks for listening.